Excellent. All right, welcome to the Sunday night There's a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website, oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions of the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Lonnie, a compulsive overeater. Lonnie, I'm not actually sure where you're from. Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania, yes.
From Pennsylvania. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Lonnie. I am a recovered compulsive eater and bulimic. And as said, I am from right outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So I really appreciate being here tonight and Davila for asking me to come here. And even though I only know one person here that I can see, I know that all of you are fellow travelers on this journey. And so I'm going to start with a third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Please help me to channel you through me and to touch the heart and spirit of whoever needs to hear my message tonight. So I have been in program since 1986, and I went to treatment in 1988. And my journey was that I have a lot of addictions and they were all intertwined. And when I put down the initial substances, my bulimia just went out of control. And it took me a while in the rooms to address that. And I actually went away to treatment in 1988. And I'm blessed that I was during an era where insurance paid for that. And I got enough time away to be able to become abstinent, but I think that I was pretty much stark raving sober, and I depended on my food plan as my program, so I might as well have been going to Weight Watchers, but it is part of my journey. I also am an exercise addict, and very much my story was that if I looked good on the outside, that I thought that I was going to be okay. I picked up sugar when I was probably 5 years old. And as I got into adolescence, I found other ways to keep me from eating compulsively, but I was a slave to just anything that would make me feel better. And as I said, you know, I just went into other addictions and eventually into recovery in 1984. So I spent, you know, I came out of that treatment program and I went to OA. I think I went to Food Addicts Anonymous. I was in therapy. I was in group therapy. I was into individual therapy. And at that time, there was a lot of people were doing adult children of alcoholics. And that was the program that I also was in. And I think my mentality was that if I just figured out how to have enough behavior modification, to have better coping skills, to you know, have the right diet, and all of that, that I could stop doing what I was doing. And it worked for a while, you know, it worked for a while. And I was able to stop binging and purging, and which was a miracle, because I did that every day. And when it started, you know, it started in the afternoon that I would have the obsession, and then I would end up having to pick up, and, you know, and I was in that cycle that in the doctor's opinion that they talk about, where, you know, on the bottom of XXDII, and where it talks about that our life is the only normal one, and that we know, and we're restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can have the sense of ease and comfort that we get by taking a few compulsive bites. For me, it was just major, full on, you know, go to the store, buy bags of, you know, my red foods, and just compulsively eat them, and then binge and purge. And so that was a cycle. And the fact that cycle had stopped was one of the first miracles that I had in program. But I was never introduced to the big book. I remember people who had the big book, you know, where they were studying it, but I remember thinking that they were big book thumpers and making fun of them. And I guess it was just my fear of running that and my ignorance. So, you know, my story is that I stayed in the rooms, and probably about 13 years in, I got married, and I started gravitating away from program. And it took me until 21 years in that I went into relapse. And I, part of what led into that was that I got into competitive bodybuilding, and I became obsessed with counting calories and with my outside. And so I like to say that I was a shiny car with no engine. And so, you know, at that point, picking up was a step up from where I was, because people, I understand that this is a beginner's meeting also for people who are coming back in. So people who are coming back in can understand on a level of what I'm talking about of somebody's unmuted somewhere. You're rattling around. Yeah, it was just that I was just so uncomfortable in my own skin. And at that point, I had no other solution. And, but for the grace of God, it took me about 4 years before, you know, pick up, put down, pick up, put down. And other substances were in there too, because I am one of those people that I will use whatever I can in order not to get fat. And because that is the most important thing to me. And so, but for the grace of God, I just realized that I had some major issues, that even though I had been in therapy and I had been in adult children of alcoholics, that it was just like an intellectual exercise of finding, you know, once again, trying to find out what was wrong with me so that I could fix it. And so I came back in via Al-Anon, and then I ended up back in OA at the same time. And I remember I was sitting at a meeting, and I looked across the way, and there was a woman there, and she was younger than me. She had much less time in the program than me, but there was something about her eyes, and she was on fire. And she had she was involved with the program, and she had been led to a very strong Big Book-based program. And I was very arrogant at the time. I had a lot of people in AA who were asking me to sponsor them in OA. And she and I wanted to learn how to take people through the steps, even though I really hadn't gone through the steps. and so I told her this, and she said, well, would you like me to take you through? And I'm like, well, yeah, I guess that would be a good idea, because then I can take these other people through. And I remember she gave me my first assignment, and I you know, it involved transcription in the Big Book. It involved answering questions. And I just went into a tailspin. I was like, oh my God, I didn't sign up for this. I don't need this. And I remember calling her up. I was just so scared, you know? And I remember calling her up, and she was just so sweet. She said, well, you know, if you don't need it, get it. But I proceeded to go forward. And the program that I work, we spend 8 to 9 weeks in the first step. And I learned that was so important for me, because if I don't know what my problem is, and I don't believe to my innermost self that I truly have this disease, I'm not going to be willing to do what it is that I need to do to recover. And so, you know, in doing the work, I learned that I had a physical allergy. Now, when I picked up my foods, I started eating them. I could not stop. I had the phenomenon of craving that took over. And who knows, you know, who knows when it would stop. But then I also found out that I had this mental obsession, you know, so, you know, it's mind, body, spirit, this disease, if we have this, and if we're the real deal. And so the mental obsession that maybe I can put down my foods, but then the obsession comes in. And it's not just for me. It's not just obsessing about food. It's obsession. My mind just starts obsessing about everything and anything. And I, once again, I'm so uncomfortable that I, you know, if I don't have a spiritual solution, I'm sunk. And so then the third part is the spiritual malady that I have, which is pretty much at the center of what this disease is, that I have a disease of my spirit, and I lose, you know, with the food. So my brain doesn't work like other people. I don't eat like other people. I don't think like other people. And so if I don't have a spiritual solution, you know, it's lack of power is my dilemma. And so I need more power. And so if I lose choice, I lose control, I lose one of those three, power, choice, and control, lose one, lose them all. And so at the end of going through step one, I end up in We Agnostics, and I end up looking at the bedevilments. And I see how unmanageable my life is. And I, you know, I thought step one, you know, like I'm powerless and my life's unmanageable. And it was the unmanageability initially that I was in touch with was the result of me being in the food. But the unmanageability that I came to understand was, you know, dash, my life is unmanageable, which is, I can't manage my own life. And I need a new source of power, which is what the rest of the steps are about. And I remember even before I started on the Big Book journey that I remember thinking, you know, that chapter, We Agnostics, that might have something in it for me. Just, you know, even though part of me said, oh, but I, you know, I believe in God and all that, but just that it might have something in it for me. And so in the second step, we'll back up a minute. If I've done the first step and I've identified that I've lost power, choice, and control, I see how unmanageable my life is. And I see, you know, it's just really an uncomfortable place to be in step one. And so I really, if I truly believe this, I believe that on 25, where it talks about there's no middle of this road solution for me. And I joke around and I say that the middle of the road solutions, I think, worked for a while until somehow they didn't work. And then I was in the middle of the road and I got run over. And the middle of the road solution is, you know, I don't think there's a self-help book. I don't think that, I mean, I believe that church and small groups and all that are a great adjunct to my program. But for me, that isn't going to solve my problem, that the right diet's not going to solve my problem, that the right therapist isn't going to solve my problem, that, you know, the right prayers aren't going to solve, that I've come to that point where I realize that I need to go forward. So I'm driven into step two. And in step two, I just love We Agnostics. And I loved the experience that I got in We Agnostics to see that all I need is just the door to be cracked open a little bit, just to be willing to start a relationship with a higher power and to continue to do the steps, because that is where I will get access to that higher power, which it's a spiritual solution. And you know, I remember early on being in recovery and going to the beach with a bunch of old timers. I'm an old timer now. And I'm in the car with my girlfriend and we're in early sobriety. And the woman turns around and says, well, where are you at in your program? And I'm like, oh, I'm in the spiritual part. And they're like, oh, honey, that is the program. And it is the program. And that doesn't mean, you know, I thought that meant religion, that I thought that meant pray more, you know, read the Bible more, go to church more. You know, but in step two, I found out that I may have had a belief in a higher power, but I didn't have a relationship or access to that power. And so as I go through step two, I, you know, am asked the question, is, you know, are you willing to believe that God is either everything or God is nothing? And, you know, and I like to say that either God is everything or I'm everything. And this is not something that I can do 100%, but it's just the willingness to believe that that is important and to believe that on my own power, I'm sunk unless I have access to a higher power. And so step two, you know, drove me into step three. And in the process that I go through in step three, in how it works, they go on and they talk about how basically describes how I am on my own going through life. And, you know, stepping on the toes of others and, you know, and just that whole reading. And I was asked to read that to someone every day for a week. And I asked my people that I take through, read it to someone different every day for a week and see if at that point that you're willing to go on with the rest of the steps. Now, for me, my journey was that when I came back in and I went into Al-Anon and I worked the steps, I remember sitting with my Al-Anon sponsor and debating, you know, like trying to figure out how I could have this relationship, and thinking that I could not go on with the steps until I figured that all out. And I had God wrapped up nice and tidy in a little box with a bow on it. And fortunately, I found out that that wasn't true. You know, that's like my lifelong journey, is to improve that relationship. You know, continue, improve, and practice. Just continue, improve, and practice. I do not believe in we go through the steps once and we're done. I believe that my life changes. I believe that God takes me where I need to go each time I go through the steps, and that it's a matter of just levels. I may be sicker than others. I grew up in an alcoholic home. I have a lot of stories and belief systems that lead me back to thinking that I need to protect myself and I need to take care of myself. And so it really has been a process in becoming closer to my higher power and to break down some of the barriers that will build up. I remember being in an OA meeting and it was a step meeting and we were in the third step. And I remember thinking, you know what? I have this big brick wall that is between me and my higher power. And so I look at it that brick by brick, that this wall has come down. And I believe that the wall is pretty much down. I will put it up to a certain extent when I get scared. But the willingness to, after step three, and I believe when I say the third step prayer, that it's a willingness to continue to turn my will and my life over to my higher power, and to continue walking towards him, her, it, whatever you want to say. And that I believe God is deep down within me. And I've been taking someone through the work, and all of a sudden I had this light bulb last week. It was like, oh my gosh, I don't need to invite God in. God's already in. And, you know, I just need to continue along the way and have the blocks that are between me and God removed. And as those blocks are removed, I have more of a flow of power, be it like water pipes, or be like electricity, you know, and that this is a daily reprieve. You know, I say I'm recovered mentally and physically, but spiritually, that's the one day at a time thing. That is the thing that I need to practice this program on a daily basis, so that I have a daily reprieve from that spiritual malady. And I believe that my ego regenerates overnight. I wake up in the morning and there it is, like, oh my God, what's wrong with my life? What do I need to fix today? What do I need to work on today? And fortunately, and this is another miracle, that I do prayer and meditation every morning. And it turns, you know, it's like, it's not, I do all different kinds of stuff, all kinds of different kinds of stuff. And for me, you know, it started with reading pages 84 through 88 in the big book every day. And now it just depends on what's going on and where God leads me. So I went through this searching and fearless moral inventory, and I believe that You know, we talk about resentment being the number one offender, but I believe my resentment is what I do with my fear to solve my own fear problems. I develop resentments in order to try and make myself safe. And so, you know, being willing to go through that. And I think I mentioned before, you know, this self-centeredness, this self-reliance. And when I first heard that, it was like, I felt like I was being criticized, you know, like beat the crap out of me. You're so self-centered, you know, stop being self-centered. And I can't be rid of that on my own. And all it means to me is that I think that I can run the show. I think that I can do God's job for him. And I can't. On Lonnie's power, I end up in the same place. So, you know, I've had wonderful experiences with fifth steps. 6 and 7, my most recent experience has been that that I just realized that, you know, I have this person that God created me to be, who is very precious. And because of life and because of me and because of other people, and
that's 25 minutes, Lonnie.
Thank you. That has been so covered up. I had a daydream a while back about, you know, how when you go to a party and the host takes your coat and puts them all on top of a bed. And I just had this visual of being underneath all of those coats, and layer by layer that God has removed those coats off of me. Sometimes I want to pull them back on top of me, but you know, that there's another miracle. And so I've had some really, you know, it's just that I'm working towards becoming the person that God created me to be. And that involves a lot of vulnerability. It really involves a lot of vulnerability and a lot of scary things, doing things differently. So 8 and 9, don't have a lot of time to tell you about 8 and 9, but I've had some wonderful experiences with them. And I don't believe that I can stay abstinent without doing amends. And so, and then in step 10, I, you know, it's neutrality around food. What an amazing thing. What an amazing thing to have that miracle happen, that I have neutrality around food, and I've had it for quite a while. And the thing is, that we go quickly into what happens when we rest on our laurels. And I believe what happens is that the spiritual malady comes back in, the mental obsession comes back in, and I'm in the food again. And so that I can't rest on my laurels. And lastly, carrying the message. You know, we talk about the circle and the triangle. And we have the triangle being recovery and unity and service. And I believed early on that service had to do with setting up and doing all kinds of stuff for the group. But I've learned that I believe that that has to do more with unity than it has to do with service. And that the ultimate service that I can do, which is also paired with spirituality, is to carry this message to other sick and suffering compulsive eaters like I am. And, you know, giving it away, it just keeps me in the solution. And I just, it's so amazing, this program, that, you know, the numbers start falling off the steps. They really do. That we have a plan for living, a design for living, and that it just is incorporated into my daily life. And without, you know, continuing to improve, practice. I learn how to do inventory. I continue to do inventory. And that also is a lifetime. It's until my life is over, this is what I do. If I want to stay spiritually awake, if I don't want to end up back in the living dead or, you know, the actual dead. So that's all. I think I'm out of time. It's great to be here. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Lonnie.